Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Today's going to be a little bit of a pivot from our normal free birth stories. Today we're going to be tackling a really intense subject, a really important subject. We're going to be talking about loss in a sovereign birth context and to some degree how it interacts with the system. My intention of having Dr. Ivy on is to help shine some light in some areas of ignorance, I think, for most people when loss does occur. You know, most of the time, I think the story goes, understandably, that families are quite sideswiped, you know, quite shocked, of course, a very natural response to unexpected loss. And when there is no provider there, I want you all considering, you know, this path to feel armored with some information and education to help support you having a death plan, if you will. You know, it's something no one wants to plan for. And yet, I think inarguably, when you have some level of preparation for this, it can go smoother. It can be slower. It can be more integrated. And I want that, you know, for any family that is going to face this tragic outcome.
Okay.
So that's the intention of this. We're going to cover a lot of ground. Dr. Ivy, why don't you give us a quick little intro about who you are in this world?
Okay. Well, I'm a clinical psychologist. I specialize in the full spectrum of maternal mental health, and I'm a hypnotherapist, a Reiki healer, a death midwife, a funeral director. I teach trauma and informed mindfulness, and I also specialize in parenting and child development and anxiety and trauma, obviously. So many different hats that I wear. I have medical staff privileges at Providence St. John's Hospital here in Santa Monica and Los Angeles, but also am known at all the hospitals. If there's a fetal demise, I am on call for that. I work with a lot of OBGYNs and maternal fetal medicine doctors here, and doulas and midwives as well. So yes, many different areas of specialty. I've been doing this for 25 plus years. And my goal is to bring healing and relief and ease in the suffering and shock and trauma and disbelief to what I believe is one of the worst losses a human being can have in their lifetime.
I first found out about your work back in my LA doula days because I knew you to be a funeral director, as you named, and I learned in my own bereavement work in the birth world in Los Angeles, I came to understand that when a baby dies in the hospital, that it wasn't legal for the parent to travel with the body if they wanted to have a home funeral, if they wanted to bring the body home. And in fact, legally, a licensed funeral director needed to be the one transporting that baby or any dead body.
Releasing, actually. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's important. That's why I became a funeral director, because that way I could be a liaison in a hospital setting or even a home setting to offer the parents a home funeral or to take the body home and just be with it for up to 8 days, and how to take care of the body. Nothing terrible is going to happen to the body. People are always so scared to handle death, and there's nothing scary about it.
No one just knows anything about it.
Yeah.
You know? When do we handle bodies?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, we used to historically bury our own dead in this country. Yeah. We'd lay our loved ones on the dining room table and dig a hole in the backyard. So then the funeral industry, which is a business, came in and said, oh, no, we need to regulate death. And so then... You know, and also we look at our culture and how death is portrayed in our culture, and it's a scary thing. And, you know, as soon as a loved one dies, I'm talking about an older person now, it's like, oh no, quickly call someone, like quick, quick, quick. And there's nothing to, there's no fire, like no one needs, there's no rush. There's no rush. This is someone you loved and knew for years. And why would you just hand them off to a stranger? It's a very interesting thing if you start to really think about it.
Yeah,
and
for
same
sure.
With an infant, a baby. You know, this woman has intimately gotten to know her infant in utero, has nurtured and grown and embodied this baby, and there's a lot of fear and anxiety and around what you know if they're told. So, my big thing, my soapbox. Is the more you can prepare women and their families and loved ones around them for what they're going to possibly see, what they're going to experience, what, you know, any answer any questions they might have, which they may not be able to think because, you know, your frontal cortex leaves the room, as I say, you can help mitigate PTSD. There's always going to be PTSD around this type of event, but you can absolutely mitigate all the freeze and the fear and the unknowns. A lot of people don't want to see their baby. They're afraid to look. They don't want to hold them. Then they regret it. They don't want to take a photo. Then they regret it. They don't want footprints. Then they regret it. So it's important to really educate. And I'm glad you're having me on this podcast. Thank you. To let people know there are resources now. In fact, when I started doing this work, when you met me, it was really new. A lot of people weren't adding this into their resume, so to speak. They weren't adding death doula or death midwife or understanding even the rights, the legal rights women have. State and federal law trump hospital policy. Even if there's not a funeral director, everyone, you have every right to walk out of the hospital with that baby.
Okay. It,
you will not be arrested. No, you will
not
be arrested.
So when the hospital tells you, because I've been in the room when this has occurred, you cannot legally take your baby out of here. It has to be a licensed funeral director.
Not true. They just want a clear handoff so they can kind of brush their hands and say, okay, we are not responsible for this body anymore. The funeral director and funeral home are not responsible.
So you're saying it's a hospital policy, not a federal law?
Correct.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I did think it was a law in terms of transporting. So you became a funeral director to be a liaison for that handoff just because of hospital policy.
Hospital policy, and because they intimidate and don't tell you the truth. They're not telling you the truth.
Shocker.
In fact, they only offer women and their families, partners, two options, cremation or burial. They don't say or home funeral.
Yeah.
They just don't. Mm-hmm. And it's so sad because when I have done home funerals or if I've seen families and women have more time with their deceased baby at home, it helps so much with their nervous system and the trauma and being able to hold or touch or
of course,
take care of and mother and father.
I mean, this is one of the long list, you know, of reasons of why many women choose free birth. If I were to birth a baby who is not alive, you know, Sister Morningstar, my elder, asks this question. So I want to credit her here. She asks the question, if your baby were to die, where would you want to be? And
I just got chills.
I've always felt really motivated by that question and inspired by that question. Obviously, the counter argument is the belief that if you were in the hospital, there would somehow be more support for life, which is actually not true in the vast majority of cases. But this idea, it's really a spiritual question. You know, where would you want to be? And to think on that, you know, obviously for women listening to this podcast and myself very much included, I would want to be home. And one of the reasons for that, that's so obvious, which is what you're pointing to, is time, is that I would get all the time that I would require, and not just me, that my children would require to know this baby, to meet this baby. And you don't get time in the hospital. That's not to say there aren't stories of women staying with their stillborns in a hospital room. There are those stories, of course. I've heard of several days actually in some hospitals, but it's so interrupted. It's so not intimate. It's like this manufactured experience inside this pretty bizarre setup. It's incredibly different. You know, there's no denying that. So let's start there, because this is a free birth podcast. You know, the women listening to this podcast are listening to this to learn how to do this. And so I want to get into, in the context of a woman birthing alone in her home, family, I don't mean alone, alone, just like outside of the purview of any provider, anyone tied to the system, should she birth a stillborn? What are the, if any, you know, what are the actual laws, as best as you could portray them? We're going to focus on America because that's where you and I both live, around reporting and also around, I don't know the correct, like politically correct word here, around removal, disposal, I don't know the right word for eventually dealing with the body. What are the actual laws or rules here?
Okay. If you have, so I just want to also add in there, if you have a miscarriage or anything before 20 weeks, you can do anything you want. You can, you know, do it however you want.
And you don't need a death certificate pre-20.
Correct. Correct. Or call anybody or anything. Post 20 weeks, anything 20 weeks gestational, that's when the laws come in. Or the regulations. So I'm going to speak to California because that's where I live. But you can always go on the Department of Consumer Affairs Funeral Bureau. I think it's Funeral and Cemetery Bureau. And specifically look up fetal death. They actually have a special category for fetal death. If you have a stillbirth at home, so you can keep your baby home for up to 8 days. Keep the body cool. You put ice packs typically behind the neck and on their back. And then keep the body in the coolest room in the house. And then you're going to see some fluid. You are, out of the ears and the nose and the eyes. The lips will turn really red. Sometimes there's blood that comes out of the nose. You know, just wipe it off. It's no big deal. Depending how long the baby has been deceased in utero, that will determine how the baby looks. The longer it's been deceased in utero, the more bloated it's going to be. It's still okay to keep it home. Some women don't know. I mean, some literally have the baby and then it's dead. Birth a dead baby. They don't even, there was a heartbeat and then there wasn't. Mm-hmm. That does happen. Mm-hmm. So those babies are going to look the best, mm-hmm. obviously. If you want to keep the baby home for more than 8 days, go ahead. All you do is tell the coroner that you were so distraught, you just couldn't make the call. That's all I have to say. There's no, it's not a crime. It's not a
Do you
crime.
think there's any concern there? And I'm just making this up. I've never heard of this happening. But do you think there's any concern around the optics of that? You know, I feel fairly protective around free birthing families, the optics of how that can look, medical neglect, concealing a dead body, like the kind of potential optics when you're already birthing without, you know, not the right way, the mainstream, you know, allowed way.
I think, you know, it's such an intimate personal experience that you have to let that go because you're not committing a crime.
Okay.
The baby was born dead. You are in shock, understandably. You love this baby. You don't want to let go of the baby. Women have a very hard time letting go of babies, even if they're dead. You know, it's just like,
of course.
And then they sit there and think of the baby in a morgue, or they
Yeah.
think of it in the refrigerator, or, you know, it's very disturbing. So I would say to those women, please don't think about optics. Think about what you need, because it is the last time you are going to be able to spend time with this baby, privately and in a loving way. A lot of people, you know, it's important to maybe bathe the baby, diaper the baby, rock the baby, sing to the baby, read it a baby story or books, you know, read books, play music. For some women, this is not their first baby. I think I told you before the podcast that I got a call from a family, an unintended birth. They had three other kids. They kept the it was a shock that she didn't have a midwife, nothing. She just went for it herself. And kept the body for 12 days. I got a call. They asked if they could bury it in the backyard. And I said, no, I'm so sorry. You can't bury.
People really don't know that.
A full-term baby in the backyard.
I know. He asked me the same thing. You know, they're the family I sent.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, his plan in a city was to just, So let's touch on that as well, because 8 days is awesome. Actually, that's really good information to know. I understand you're not saying that's necessarily nationwide, but that is a really long time. I've never walked this path personally, but I've supported many women who have, and that's a long time. You know, to spend, and also the body decomposes, you know, the body,
not much actually.
If you keep it really cold.
Typically though, 3 days is what
we
recommend, 3 days.
Yeah.
But yes, yes, you're starting
I mean, I've seen some mostly in the hospital, but after 2-3 days, starts to get,
I understand.
They start to look pretty
yeah. The
not great.
Blood is pooling and
they're
pretty, I understand.
Which then it's like having the image of that understandably might not be something that the mother wants. But in my experience, you have way more, but in my experience, I feel like women usually feel pretty complete if they've had a couple days as complete. I say that really sensitively, like as complete as someone could possibly feel in this really crazy situation. But okay,
correct.
So 8 days, that's so helpful to know that, because, and maybe you've already heard of this situation, but something that I know happens in the free birth world, unfortunately, is a stillborn is born and the knee jerk reaction is to call 911.
Right.
Now, I don't totally understand why, other than I think it's kind of a desperate, like, maybe there's something they can do, you know, maybe we're misunderstanding the situation or something.
Right.
Now, the huge, you know, obvious problem with this is you can't reverse dead. And as soon as you call 911 and bring 9 men in uniform and police and EMTs into your living room while your placenta is still inside you, it's not it like there's no reality where that is supportive to the next phase of what's about to of what needs to happen, not just connecting and processing with your baby, but you still have to release your placenta, which is a very real thing, you know. And so this is part of why I really want to do this episode, because I want women who are going to choose this path and birth workers who are going to support women birthing in a sovereign way. Mm-hmm. If the baby is gone, the baby is gone. And one of the greatest gifts you can give to that room and to that family is to remind them that they have time. There isn't yes. anything to do. Assuming yes. mom's okay, obviously, assuming right. mom is physically okay, right. Which I see no reason why she wouldn't be. Time is everything. And so yeah. many bereaved mothers have told me about their regret in free birth situations, of their just deep regret of rushing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When a woman wants sovereign support, it can seem impossible to find. Where are the midwives, the birth photographers, the chiropractors, the childbirth educators, and the healers that really get it? Well, we are all finally in one place. I'd like to introduce the MatraBirth Directory, Free Birth Society's newest offering to support the birth liberation movement. It's the first of its kind. Do you serve women? Get listed. Do you want support? Become a member. We envision a world where networking the sovereign birth paradigm is easy and abundant for all. Join us. Just go to www.matrabirthdirectory.com. When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Well, your adrenaline's pumping. Totally. You're in shock. You're just trying to save maybe the baby. You know, you're trying to think of, like you said, like, can we save this baby? So yeah. I think there's a lot of, like, everything is just so surreal that the sense of reality just gets warped. And mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, when you're in shock and trauma, you can't think clearly.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to make decisions, especially with unattended births or not having midwives or doulas there who can shepherd and kind of say, listen, there's no rush. I'm so sorry, your baby is deceased. There is no way to resuscitate. And it's really important you spend time. So if someone could just really bring home that message in that moment, that would be great.
This is, again, it's, you know, I said at the very beginning, it's a bizarre thing, you know, that no one wants to talk about or plan for, but you do need a death plan. You know, if you're birthing in a sovereign way, obviously if you're choosing the hospital or medical providers, like, they kind of handle it, you know, they kind of like lead it mm-hmm. for better or worse. Sometimes it's handled really beautifully and gracefully, and other times it isn't. But if you're doing it in a sovereign way, there is no other leaders, and this will only serve you. Like, God forbid it happens. And I also want to get across that fetal demise is not rare.
No.
You know, and people don't, I feel like, really get that, because it's so separated from the rest of our culture, and no one really is connected to birth or death and all of that. But it's not rare. It's not rare in the free birth world. It's not rare in the normal mainstream, you know, hospital setup. It's natural death is occurring at all stages of life. And it's just, I don't know if I'd say common. I don't know what would define it as common, but it's definitely not rare or uncommon.
It's not uncommon, sadly. SIDS is more uncommon. We talk about SIDS much more than we talk about stillbirth. Mm-hmm. SIDS is, I think it's one in like like 2,500 babies, and then stillbirth is one in 120 or 170 now. I mean,
it's
some,
not,
it's huge difference.
So the point is not to freak you know, listeners out. It's just, I want to really like normalize the truth about this, because one of the aspects of this that breaks my heart is how unprepared people are, because they've never even tried this on. And in a way, you know, I do think sovereign birthing parents are more prepared. They do try this on because there isn't anyone to outsource to, you know. Women having wild pregnancies kind of have to contend with the reality of not knowing, in a way that you don't have to if you're getting ultrasounds every 3 seconds. But still, there's so much ignorance around what to actually do in this situation.
Yeah.
And so they just, you know, people just knee-jerk involve the system because they think they have to. So let's just touch back on burial. So pre-20 weeks, do whatever you want. No paperwork. No, you know, the system is not required to be involved. After 20 weeks, it is considered a real baby, and it requires a death certificate. And so burial cannot happen in your own way. It needs to be, you know, properly handled, which I mean, like, through the system. So will you speak to that a little bit about what a woman's options would be there, and like, what are like
short
options that you see?
The best option is to get your OBGYN involved, so then you don't have to go through a coroner.
Okay, let's talk about that. So what about if you don't have one because you're free birthing?
Then you have to go through a coroner, and an autopsy is required, sadly, because any baby that's born deceased and or dies under a year, the coroner is mandated to perform an autopsy to make sure there was no foul play, sadly. So
though there are waivers, every woman I have served in California has been able to get out of the autopsy.
Great.
And that, just for everyone outside of California, that's not actually true in every state, which is interesting.
Yeah.
We just had a bereaved mother on a community call recently who said she actually wanted it, and she was discouraged. The coroner said, there's no point to do that. You don't want to do it, which I was like, whoa.
That was great. Yeah.
That's not normally what
it's
I hear.
Much nicer, obviously, to go that way.
So in your experience, have you also seen that? Is it pretty hard to get out of autopsies? Is that, I guess you probably are mostly seen. Tell me more about this OBGYN things. That's a really interesting angle. And could it be any physician?
If you can get it can be any attending physician that will attest within 15 hours, though. This is now that, cause of death and sign a piece of paper, you can avoid the coroner system. You can go straight to a funeral director.
So how would that look in a home birth? Let's just say the family had an ally in that way, had an attending physician. Baby is born still. They would call that attending physician. That attending physician would come to the home, I'm assuming, to give you a piece of paper.
Actually would probably come to examine the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to attest on a piece of paper time of death, cause of death, and then they submit that paper to the hospital that they have privileges at.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Or they can give it to the funeral director that this family has chosen.
Okay. And so in that case, is it true that that family could avoid the police?
Coroner. Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's so good.
Then you don't get your home as a crime scene.
Right.
Which is that's just another huge trauma. Huge. It's unbelievable.
Some of the stuff that happens, I mean,
it's so sad.
Some of the stuff that happens to free birth families in particular, tearing apart their homes, looking in their phones, you know, threatening really, really gnarly charges. I've never seen anything actually like move forward, but that alone is.
Did you see that in California?
No.
Yeah, they don't do that in California. But they do separate the parents from the baby and don't let them near the baby while they examine. It's really awful. It's just they treat the family like criminals until,
of course.
Yeah,
but until proven otherwise.
They don't tear apart the house. So I mean, I haven't seen that happen. That makes
and then
sense.
It's a whole nother can of worms if the baby was born alive and then died.
Absolutely.
That's a very different conversation.
Yes.
That has potentially way more legal ramifications mm-hmm. to the parents under the guise of medical neglect. And that's to be taken, you know, very seriously, how you choose to share that information with whoever you involve, because that's extremely different than mm-hmm. my baby was born sleeping.
Right.
Okay. So the least dramatic way and the most sovereign way in a way, and the least dramatic way would be to somehow have an attending physician ally who is willing to play this role, which sounds pretty special. I know they exist. I've heard of
yes.
them.
Yes, they know. Do.
And this is where I would really look to the birth workers, you know, in communities to find who those people are, not to the families, you know. That's
I would definitely have someone on standby or someone they can consider you a patient. You've had mm-hmm. established a patient relationship, even if you don't use them for the birth.
So that's what I was going to ask. So do they have to be an established patient? Okay. That's kind of a problem then.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's
well,
tricky.
It can be one, you know, one time exam. That's it.
Yeah.
And you never go back.
Yeah. I'm thinking of one woman I know who does this, but I think she establishes at the time of coming to the home.
Oh, that's
but
nice.
But not in California.
Yeah, that's nice.
So,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
It's state by state. It's state by state. And I've noticed that Idaho and like even the Carolinas can be rougher on these situations than a California.
So the best case options is if you have a physician ally like that who's willing to do this, then they can deal directly with the funeral director of where
yes.
the baby's going to go, and the baby has to go. Right? That
at some point
to be
at
made
some
clear
point.
At some
Yeah.
point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the options from there, well, I would love for you to speak about what a home funeral can be and what that would look like. I think that's something that people are very interested in, and there's just not a ton of resources about that.
Yeah. So you obviously invite friends and family to come. You can have, if you're religious, you can have someone that, you know, a priest or a rabbi or whomever can come and also offer words of love and support to everyone that is attending. Or I, as a funeral, or as a funeral director, death midwife, I can do that. I can get stories from the mom, stories from the dad, and kind of interweave something beautifully, you know, something to say beautifully to everyone attending, and add poems or anything special to them that would be meaningful. It's also, I meant to preface that with all, it's very important to name your baby. Yeah. It's very important. Maybe not the name you would have given it mm-hmm. if you want to try again, or you hope to try again and have another baby, or give it its given name that you were hoping to use. But it's important to name the baby, and hopefully a name that you wouldn't hear every day, so you're not triggered. Mm-hmm. A lot of people pick like Hawaiian names or something in a different language, or maybe something they called the baby in utero that was cute, like little bean or something, nothing that's going to trigger you to hear the name Sarah or whatever, for example. But it's very important to name your baby and honor your baby that way. So you have friends, family, you have someone come speak. It could be even me and their priest and rabbi. You know, it can be that. There's so many beautiful ways to give symbols. If you do it outside, obviously lots of flowers, and you could do a butterfly release or ladybugs. You could have people write personal notes to the family and or this baby and tie the notes into a tree, and make the tree like this sacred area for people to share their thoughts and feelings.
And this is all happening within that 8 days. Right.
Yes.
Because then
yes.
the body has to.
Well, hopefully 3 to 4 days with the home funeral. It can't, but again, up to 8 days. Sure. Up to 8 days. And the music is important. And
that's just like a lot to wrap your head around in 3 days. Wow.
But as a death midwife, I've got it down.
Oh, like, totally. I just mean for the parents to even like, yeah, they would just need to know it's an option. Step one. Right. And then it's like, this is our chance. This is, yeah, it's just, wow. It's a lot.
I've never had an experience where anyone regretted it.
No, of course not. Quite the opposite, right? I mean, so many women, they move so fast through this and then their baby's gone and there's nothing to commemorate this. And it's like grasping at air then. Yeah. I mean, it's totally that ritual is so important.
Yeah. Ritual is huge. Ritual helps put order in chaos.
Right.
So that's why we have funerals, typically, so that people can come together as a community and support the parents and honor this baby that was so loved and cherished and wanted. And it's just a beautiful way to say goodbye. Although there isn't ever really a true goodbye for the family, the parents, you know, there is something called continuing bonds and continuing the relationship after death, that even though death ends a life, it doesn't end a relationship. That's one of my favorite quotes. And it's true. So there's other ways to honor this baby as you move through your lifetime, because this baby will never be forgotten and can be incorporated as part of your family in holiday celebrations or, you know, you have death anniversaries, birthday anniversaries, date of death anniversaries, due date anniversaries. You never forget that. You never forget that.
What are some beautiful ways that you've seen families keep ongoing with those relationships?
You know, setting, I just had a family like light a candle and put a picture of their baby on the Thanksgiving table. Get an ornament for the tree. Hang a stocking with their name on it anyway. Some people still put a little present under the tree. They go sit in the nursery and remember their baby and just feel like that's time to connect. So many ways. There's lots of ritual, but usually, you know, if they live on land where they have a backyard, usually it's planting a tree in their honor, or a bench, or giving back to the community in some way for women that have gone through this or families that have gone through this.
So after the home funeral, the two options, as I understand it, is cremation or burial. Is it true with burial with a stillborn like this, would they still have to be embalmed and the whole shebang?
No.
Okay. Will you
not at all.
We speak about that a little bit, and what do you see families choose, and anything to say about that?
They do not choose embalming. That's super rare, very rare.
For stillborns.
Yeah, for stillborns.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if it was a law or not, because for older bodies, that's just standard.
It's not a law. No, it's not a law.
Yeah.
It's an option.
Okay.
All embalming is an option.
Okay, cool. I didn't know that.
It's not a law.
Because I know that Jewish people don't embalm as a part of their culture.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so it's an option. And so what is it like for burial of a baby? And it would obviously need to be in a cemetery. What do you see people choose? And is there anything I'm missing there to add?
If they have a full funeral, they usually bring the baby in a basket. It's usually in a really pretty, not a coffin, a basket is their kind of what they're buried in. Some people do a private viewing before the ritual or the service, and some don't. Some just bring in the basket, and it's decorated usually with flowers and whatnot, and then everyone goes graveside and can witness the burial if they want to stay. What's sad about that, though, is the cemeteries like push everyone away and back. They don't let you stand close. So it can be very impersonal. Just to let everyone know, you know, because it's not what you see in a movie. Let's put it that way. Or Jewish cemeteries are different. Obviously, you're standing there. You can throw dirt in there. You can, you know, you get to throw flowers or dirt and all that. But in the actual basket, I have parents put letters, love letters in there, goodbye letters. They can obviously dress the baby how they want, wrap the baby in a blanket, bury it with anything that was significant to them during the pregnancy. Cremation, you can burn letters, nothing, you can't have anything metal, but you can have the baby wrapped again in a blanket or an outfit that you want. And again, the letters are very important if you choose cremation too. The thing that's important to know about cremation is that some funeral homes will, or crematoriums will mail the ashes to you, which seems impersonal. A lot of families will go pick up the ashes, and it's a big moment. It's a big emotional moment to go pick up your baby's ashes. It's very nice to have a funeral director who will personally pick up the ashes for you and bring it to your home. I think that's the nicest way to do it.
Especially because mom is still like pretty early postpartum.
Absolutely. Ugh. And then they come in a box, and they come in a baggie with a twisty tie. They don't come in something nice.
Yeah, you have to buy that, right?
Yeah. So I always kind of forewarn families, like, look, it's not going to come in some pretty little box or urn even. So just to know how it comes, and that, and then there's no rush with the ashes. That's another thing that's so important. Some families feel like they need to do something quickly with the ashes, and it's like, no, you can keep the ashes as, you know, you never have to disperse the ashes, or you can turn it into memorial jewelry. There's not going to be a lot of ash. You can turn it into memorial jewelry. You can take a trip and disperse some of it in Hawaii, for example. You know, there's so many things, obviously, with cremains that you can do. Some people put them in a teddy bear. There's teddy bears that are made for this, and stick it on their bed. But it's important to set up a space, a sacred space, ritual space in your home for this baby. So again, maybe a photo of the footprints, or if the baby looks pretty good, a photo of all of them together holding the baby, a candle, the ashes, whatever, stuffed little bear, whatever, you know, you get the idea. So little things, seashells, things that meant something to them during the pregnancy.
Yeah. Is there any other commemoration options that parents might not think of that you've seen that are pretty cool?
A lot of people get bereavement tattoos
With
in
the
honor.
tattoo ash.
Yes, they can. Yeah, they can do the tattoo ash. But a lot of people get memorial tattoos for their babies. They participate in the Walk to Remember that we have here in California. Let's see, what else has been really interesting? So much. I had a dad that did make a book about his baby and had it bound and everything. It was so beautiful. There's just, it's numerous. You look on Etsy. Etsy has amazing ideas for bereavement, options and jewelry and, memorial
art.
Yeah. Art, memorial stuff. Yeah.
So let's pivot for a minute to showing up for families who are in this process. What do you notice is really helpful? You know, what this, you know, this kind of goes without saying, this is a space where I think a lot of people feel very clueless of how to support. And because of everyone's like enormous discomfort with death and with birth and postpartum, it can often create this perfect storm where the mother is, depending on her culture and family dynamic, obviously, this is not a one size fits all, but often it's not uncommon for a woman to be left alone, like a lot, and to be really not checked on. You know, all of this is also true for postpartum with a live baby. I'm equally as concerned about that, but what do you have to say about what you've seen work really well, or just anything around supporting families navigating this?
Well, it's really important that the woman isn't left alone.
Yeah.
I really recommend that highly. If she's partnered with a man, I ask that, you know, what's his paternity leave and, how many weeks can he stay home with her? And then who else can we get to come in? So if the family, obviously the best scenario is when families are close and they have family members that live close by, or family members willing to travel and come stay for a few weeks. Those are ideal scenarios. There are scenarios where they just don't have family members nearby. So it's a little more of a struggle to get that company to come over. It's about then, okay, what can we plan in her day structurally, so that the hours that she's alone, you know, she can reach her husband partner during the day if she needs them, that the partner understands that it's important to check in with her as well during the day. And then what can we get her to do? Can we get her to go for a walk? Can we get her to meet a friend for coffee or tea? Can, you know, how can we add some sort of structure in the day so that she's just not left to her own thoughts all day? It's just the worst to have that happen. Friends and family, meanwhile, as you know, they can say some things that are very insensitive, dismissive, minimizing, and just not helpful, frankly. So, a friend that can set up a meal train, that's really important, so they don't have to think about food. That is definitely something important to do.
Also, just to add here that lots of new birth workers are usually quite willing to do bereavement support for free, out of the goodness of their heart, for experience, all of that. So if you are someone supporting a family, like check in on the local doula Facebook groups or something like that. Ask a birth worker to help you find one or two women, because I've never not been able to find women willing to donate postpartum hours in these situations.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So it's about making sure she's, you know, maybe listening to a guided meditation that is not triggering, that's short, eyes open, don't close your eyes in meditation after trauma.
Wait, why? I've never heard that.
Because often the brain doesn't like the eyes closed because it doesn't feel holding with, it's not like supportive. It's it feels amorphous. It feels like nothing's really holding you together, that you need to just softly gaze at a candle or
be in the room,
some inanimate object.
Yeah.
Okay. It's better to leave your eyes open. It can, when your eyes are open, you're able to be more present. And when you're in trauma, you're not present.
Okay.
You're just not present. You're just not there. There's certain breath work that I teach that's trauma informed. So a lot of people are told to just breathe and relax if they feel tense or anxious or even having a panic attack. That's terrible advice. The best thing you can do is actually you need to tense and breathe. So tightening your hands, putting your arms against your body, tightening your butt and thighs as you breathe in through the nose, and you hold it forever or count of 10, 8, whatever feels okay. And then you slowly release through the mouth. And as you release through the mouth, you release the tension in the body. And you do that at least 8 to 10 times. You can also push up against a wall. Pushing up against something firm and hard reminds your body that you are contained. And it's calming to your nervous system. Laying on the floor, having your partner hold you from behind and give you a nice firm hug is usually very grounding and very feels very supportive for the nervous system.
I've heard a lot of mothers who've lost their babies share similar sentiments around really struggling to desire to stay, you know, really wanting to go be with their babies out, you know, wherever their babies went.
And you mean they want to die? Or
yeah.
They, okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. And I'm sharing that here because, you know, part of this not leaving her alone is like, it can get real, real dark. And most people do not have the skill set or maturity or awareness to meet a woman in that level of darkness. But I think a lot of women that are listening to this podcast probably do or can. And so, you know, this idea of not leaving her alone and taking some leadership in structuring her day or her activities or her caretaking or whatever, you know, and also, yeah, just the potential of meeting her and holding her in her darkness, because most women, I think, are really, like you said, they're, if they let any of that out, it's very minimized. It's very like, oh, honey, of course it's not your fault. Like, just very quick, just like, no, we actually need to turn over every stone. She needs a lot of space to process and to go into all the weird angles and stuff at 3 a.m. that she's, you know, trying on. And undeniably, when we're able to do that with her in a loving, mature way, it will become less obsessive. It will become more integrated, because that's what being witnessed does. You know, that's a really important part of navigating grief. And otherwise, you know, so many women, they're alone and they're tripping and they're blaming themselves and it gets real dark and there isn't anyone to orient them or even just witness them. So I feel very strongly about that. And it plays into all the tips you just said around containment, you know, that from us on the outside, there's a different kind of containment we can offer. Yeah, because it is something to know. I think a lot of women won't tell their friends that they're thinking about committing suicide, that they're thinking about what would it be like if I just wasn't here, or spending time not wanting to be here. And in a spiritual way, I think that makes sense to try that on, or to have some, like, we want to be with our babies. We're designed to be with our babies, and it doesn't make sense when our babies aren't with us. It just doesn't make sense.
That's correct. First, I'd like to just normalize and validate that is also a very normal thought.
Right.
That if you have that thought, it doesn't mean you're crazy. And it doesn't mean, oh my God, I'm going to be locked up and put in a psych ward for thinking that I want to just die and be with my baby. So I'd also like to add, when I hear a woman already has children or a child previous to this loss, I breathe a little bit of sigh of relief, because they're less likely to go harm themselves and go into even a deeper depression, because they have to get up. Yeah. They have to live and interact with that other baby child in their day. And it takes them out of their sadness, just even for brief moments. Even if we get those few seconds, that's better than nothing. When this is their first baby, it is devastating, to say the least. And it is probably the most unfathomable thing one could ever imagine they're going through. They hear it happens, they never think it's going to be them. And of course, there's a lot of self-blame. They blame their body. They hate themselves. They hate their body. They think that, you know, this is all their fault. They were supposed to keep this baby alive. Their body failed. I'm making everyone sad. I disappointed and let down my partner or my husband. I didn't bring this baby in alive. I'm creating so much sadness for everyone around me. So there's so much self-blame. And there's, as you said, that hamster wheel at 3 a.m. of the woulda, coulda, shoulda, only if, what if, you know, what if I didn't birth at home? What if I hadn't gone 40 plus weeks? What if, you know, I had, you know, so they're just going to do the blame game. And it's part of putting order in chaos. Mm-hmm. It's normal. We are wired differently than men. Our brains are just different. When we talk, we release oxytocin, actually. So in trauma, we need to talk. Mm-hmm. We will talk and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. And people around us get compassion fatigue. So I often have to tell men and partners, this is a big part of their healing. And when you hear them have to repeat it again, take a deep breath, move your feet and your shoes, and just be, and hold that space for her and go, I know this is really hard. I know you need to, I'm here to hear you. I'm here to be with you. Is there anything I can do to support you right now? Do you need a hug? That is about it. That is about all you can do. And that's a lot, by the way.
And that's such a good, you know, circling back of, like, it shouldn't only be this male partner who's holding space for her. You know, it is different. It's important, but it's different than what women can.
Right. That's why it's important, if they can, to find a professional in their area or outside their area anyway, that specializes in this and can be that other support to hear them, where they can talk about their deepest fears and their shame and their embarrassment and their, the things they think that they shouldn't actually even utter out of their mouths, for all the fears of being seen as this defective, cuckoo, terrible person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I asked my private membership if they had any questions that they wanted me to make sure I asked you. And maybe we could close with a couple of those.
Okay.
This is a pretty big one, but any theories on stillbirth?
Theories. That's a,
Yeah.
I wish they were a little more specific.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, I think you and I both know for the vast majority of cases, it's total question mark. It's not clear. It's just conjecture. You know, is that the right word? It's just kind of guessing. Of course, the brain wants to figure it out. Of course, we want to know so that you can prevent it, so that you can make sense of it. And you know, please tell me yours. In my experience, in the vast majority of fetal demise I've ever been connected to, supported, there was no way we knew what it was. Autopsy or not.
Right. The placenta tells the story, first of all. I like to say that. So after stillbirth, it's really important that there's placental pathology done. It's typically not the baby itself. People think it's the baby. It's not the baby. It's the placenta. Theory? No, because I mean, I just ran a support group for couples with stillbirth, and every single one of them had cord compression accidents. There's nothing you can do with about that.
Yeah.
Nothing. There are
so
cases.
These are families at birth in the system that the baby died close to emergence, most likely.
No, all of them died pre-birth, cord accident.
And how is that not just a guess?
Because I had Harvey, all of them went to Harvey Kleinman, who I refer all my stillbirth couples or women to. He's a doctor out of Yale University, and he is still the only one in the United States who can help find the answer to what happened to that baby in utero through the placenta.
Through the placenta, you're saying. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that these mothers sent their placenta to this guy, to this man, and he somehow could tell that there was cord compression.
Yep, based on the capillaries and the way the cells show up in the placenta, it tells the story. Yeah.
So it'd be just constricted
blood flow.
Blood flow, yeah. I mean, cord compression is probably,
yeah.
That's got to be one of the most common.
So cord accidents happen. They just do. And there's nothing you can do about it. But it absolutely is random at the end of the day, though. It is.
You think so?
Cord accidents are random. Cord accidents, you can't prevent anything. Even if the MFM sees the cord is wrapped or whatever, shortened or whatever, like, there's nothing they can do.
Totally. Yeah, of course.
You
anything
know?
In utero,
except deliver early. That woman would have to be managed. She'd have to go in a hospital. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing otherwise.
Yeah, but the dangers.
I agree.
Like A-ROMing a woman who's, you know, A-ROM is directly linked to cord prolapse, and you have a baby who's already potentially not being proactively protective with the cord. Like, there's just no. Yeah. I mean, I obviously think births in the system are far more dangerous.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I hear you.
For lots of
reasons. We are totally in agreement on that.
So I guess the last thing I'd like to ask you is, would you speak just a little bit about what is a death midwife? I think it's a pretty new concept to most people. And, you know, like, the question that was pitched in the membership was, how could anyone find anyone? I know they're not on every corner of our of our neighborhoods, you know. I only know maybe three. And so, you know, what is a death midwife? Is there a track for someone interested in learning how to become this? Is there
absolutely
a way that someone could find them?
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, I mean, the internet is here. So you can find death midwives probably in your area by searching. I mean, I guess you're actually asking for a full spectrum doula is actually right. The question.
What is a death midwife? I guess maybe
someone who, well, typically it's someone who companions someone through their transition to death. Mm-hmm. In my case, a death midwife is someone who comes in and helps the woman understand, like I said in the beginning of the podcast, what to expect.
Yeah.
That there's nothing to be scared of, that your baby's going to look beautiful and perfect to you. These are the things that might, you know, to expect and to look, you might see, and that holding your baby is something you will cherish forever.
Oh, meaning that families will find out in the system that their baby's gone and then contact you, and you will coach them prior to birth.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I also have come in after, you know, and given them information and normalized all their emotions and feelings. And I have it written on paper or even a handout. I think I have one here. What to expect if your baby dies. If you learned your baby has died, helping you through the process. So it's a two-sided card that I have at hospitals. Mm-hmm. And to slow down is like huge yeah. on here. And just, again, the things I already mentioned to you, you know, that you can request to be put in a quieter room so you don't have to hear other babies being born. On L&D, so ask if there's a quieter place to go to be with your deceased baby. Ask if they have a cold cot. These are things that help keep the baby cool. You can also ask that they keep the baby warm, because you're just in the hospital, and if you're not in a hospital, then yeah. you're going to want to have ice packs available if you plan to keep your baby home for the 8 days. If not, there's no rush to put it on ice. I mean, you can be with your baby for as long as you want. But taking photographs is important. Yeah. So you may not want to look at them right away, but you'll be glad to have them eventually. Mm-hmm. So if there's anything else, do skin to skin. As I said, rock, hold, kiss, and cuddle your baby. Bathe and diaper your baby. Sing and read a book. Ask for hand and footprints, lock of hair. And then, so anything else? Oh, we didn't talk about breast milk. So a lot of women do want to donate breast milk. They feel like at least they could give it to someone else. And so there's always, well, in LA, there's, you know, a network where you can do that. And you don't need to give it to a milk donation site. You can, yeah. but you don't have to. Then there's also ways that it's important to help women suppress it if they don't want to do that. I wanted to bring up that, not to forget that at least in California, you can get something called a certificate of stillbirth. So when a woman has a stillbirth, they get a death certificate, but they don't get a birth certificate. And this is a way to get a birth certificate. So again, going to the funeral and cemetery bureau in your state, hopefully they offer this. They do in California.
So there really isn't such thing as a sovereign death. Like, it's not really possible in America.
And when you say sovereign death, can you tell me?
Like more? Outside of the system. Like, there's no way. You can't bury a body outside of,
unless you completely keep it secret.
Right, exactly.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Because there's no one, like, we don't have to record our pregnancies. You know what I mean? Nobody's watching you that closely. So if you want to have a sovereign death, you can. It's just
illegal.
Illegal and super secret. Illegal yeah. and secret.
You know, I guess maybe the last question I'm thinking about before we wrap is around autopsy, and just wondering what you would add, because I think that it is not common knowledge that autopsies almost never deliver any information, you know, around cause of death.
Autopsies typically do not give you any information. They really don't.
I've just known so many women who've done it, you know, understandably just like grasping at, I have to know something.
Yes.
And then nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're so gutted
yep.
that they did this, you know, or allowed this to their child's body to render no results. And so I guess I just wanted to make sure that was kind of named on here.
Yeah.
That I have seen the system say it's required a lot. And
no.
Like I said earlier, I've also seen pretty much every family I've ever walked this with get out of it. Yeah. And just, is there anything else to add about autopsies? Because that's such a big, just heartbreaking part about this whole thing. But if you really don't want one and you find yourself in this situation, I mean, do what you need to do, you know, like get a lawyer, like figure it out, because I've really seen a lot of success when parents fight back.
I agree.
It's so, you know, when the system says this is what we're doing, most people do not feel empowered to do anything about it. And it's really upsetting, because
well, yeah.
In the vast majority of cases where I've seen people fight, they win. They get it figured out. They get what they want.
Right. But when you're in shock and trauma, you know, it's, you're trying to scramble. And if a coroner gets involved, at least in Los Angeles, they're mandated to do the autopsy within 24 hours. So, you know, every city by city, state by state, it's all gonna be different. But I think what we start off with this podcast, which is so important, is a death plan. We have a birth plan, but what if, God forbid, lightning strikes? What's your death plan? And just having a conversation is super important with your midwife or your doula.
Or husband.
Or, yeah.
In a free birthing setup. I mean, that was with our second baby. We didn't even like talk about the birth. You know, we knew how I would do it is how I did it with my daughter. And I think I was 37 weeks in the middle of the night. I just was like, Johnny. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, we haven't talked about the birth literally at all. And he was like, well, what do we need to talk about? And I said, I thought about it. And I was like, you know, I think the only thing I want to say is, if this baby's not born alive, don't do anything. That's really the only thing I can think of that I hadn't said out loud, or that he wouldn't just know about me. I mean, he did know that. He was like, yeah, duh, of course.
Right.
And that was it. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we've said what we need to say about this upcoming birth, you know. But that piece, I've coached so many women in debriefing their stories of the husband or doula knee-jerk calling and then being really quite upset, and it really challenging their marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. No, good. This is a really important conversation, and thank you for having it with me.
How can women find more about your work?
Let's see. Instagram, Dr. Ivy Margulies. My website, drivylove.com. Love is my middle name. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to do show notes, but, you know, I'll put in my email address and my phone number.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my honor. Thanks. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below.
We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needle. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars. Conscious consent.